Hey, what up? What's happening, everybody? It is a rare Friday drop today of a Let There Be Talk. I wanted to do it because my good friend Fahim Anwar has a brand new special out today that's absolutely free on YouTube, and it was shot entirely at the Comedy Store in all three rooms. A very cool original idea. The name of the special is Hat Trick, and I wanted to have him on the show and really promote this and get it out there because there's people like him, myself, and other guys that don't have the machine doing our specials. So any kind of word of mouth is greatly appreciated. And I think that is the strongest at the end of the day, the most trusted, the grassroots way of, hey, this guy is funny. You got to check it out. And you email the link to your friend or you send him the DM and show him his Instagram or his TikTok or Twitter, whatever. Fahim is a fantastic comedian, been doing it 20 years. I had him on the show, I think about 5 years ago. He's been a friend for over 11 years and just crazy funny. Really original jokes, excellent act outs. He is the whole package. As they would say in the business, this man's the whole package. Anyway, so I wanted to drop the episode today, and I hope you enjoy it. I hope you have a great three-day weekend, and I can't thank you guys enough for all your support on Let There Be Talk. And I will be dropping a bonus episode for the Patreon people that'll be completely different than this one, and that'll be this weekend on Patreon, and I'll also be doing a Zoom fest with all the Patreoners. Bonus episode I'll be talking about. I saw Def Leppard last night at the Whiskey. It was absolutely insane. You can hear about that. I'm also going to be talking about some other great stuff like, what else? Oh, the George Carlin doc. If you have not seen that, holy shit, that is great. And a couple other things. So let's get into it right now. Welcome to our three-day weekend party here with Fahim Anwar and his new special, Hat Trick. All right, a rare Friday episode here.
Whoa.
doing a Friday episode because my friend Fahim has a new special coming out today on YouTube called Hat Trick. And if you don't know what the hat trick is, you could go ahead and say what it is for him.
Hey, you know what it is too, man. You're a store comic. You know what it is.
Yeah.
You tell him.
Okay, here's what the hat trick is. There's three rooms at the Comedy Store. You have the original room, you have the belly room, and you have the main room. The main room is a giant, big room, holds about 400. It's kind of like a theater. The belly room is this cool, small 180-seater. And then, I mean, the original room. And then the belly room holds 80.
Yeah.
And they're all in the same building, which is genius because once in a while, when the planets line up, unless you're a big star, you could do the hat trick every night if you're a big star. You just come in and go, hey, you know, I'm going to do the hat trick.
Yeah, you just tell people I'm doing the hat trick and no one's going to stop you.
Right.
Like if Eddie Murphy comes by and says, I'm doing the hat trick tonight.
And he might do the hat trick one day.
Right? I mean, I just want him to do one. I want him to do one. Let's start with one.
God, it'd be so great.
Yeah.
But with somebody like Fahim or myself, over the years of working at the Comedy Store, there would be these random things that would happen where it would line up. So maybe you're in the original room and that's your regular set, 9:30. And then you get off stage and they go, hey, man, such and such is late. Can you jump on in the main room? You're like, oh, yeah. And now you're in the main room. And then as you're leaving, someone comes down from the belly room and goes, hey, man, you want to jump on my belly room show tonight? Bam, the hat trick.
Yeah. Doing it's all wild. Three. You get a little flavor of different types of shows, different types of rooms, different types of crowds. And it flexes and exercises that muscle of being malleable as a comedian. Because even though you might be doing the same set, I mean, in this special, I'm doing different sets in each room. But like normally comedians were working on the same chunk for a bit. You will change it depending on the room. Because if it's like a chill vibe, like a hangout in the belly, you're going to dial it back to match the vibe rather than a roaring OR where it's just like electric, like an underground nightclub or something. And then the main room is so theatrical and big. You sort of change the dials on you as a performer.
Yeah. And I don't even think you do it
consciously.
On purpose.
Yeah, no.
Not at all. The room dictates the flavor. A perfect example, Saturday night I did Original Room and the Belly Room. And Original Room, I was, crazy. And then I went up there, and it was a smaller crowd, about 40. And I just whipped out notes and sat down and tried stuff. And it just felt that that's what it called for.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great lesson in energy matching. There are so many like facets of stand-up comedy. And you like the longer you do it, you learn how to paint with all the colors, and it's like there's joke writing, there's performance elements to it. You know what I mean? Like when you start, you don't even know how to tell a joke. You don't like the writing and the structure. You don't even have that. And then once you master that, then it's then like that whole energy matching thing. You don't learn until much later in your career because you sort of have one speed.
Yeah,
and then you start getting some other speeds, and you realize, oh, I'm performing for 400 people, and it's a 50 person room, and it smells artificial.
And
exactly. And some comics don't learn that lesson until later. But I think the Comedy Store, I always call it the X-Men training room of comedy.
Yeah,
we're so fortunate to have that gym.
It's insane, man. And also, you really learn dynamics too of. You know, your voice dynamic of not just steamrolling through because it's a big crowd, and you start to learn like I can hang back and linger a little bit here. Yeah, you learn everything about comedy in those different dynamics, and sometimes in a matter of 30 minutes, you're starting to learn like that joke didn't work. I'm going upstairs. I get a chance to do it again. I'm going to tweak it a little bit, and next thing you know, oh yeah, I'm on to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, having those multiple tries throughout a night, like if you are to do a hat trick, just what you can learn from room to room in a matter of minutes.
Do you remember your first hat trick?
I don't remember the exact. I don't have it like framed, right. Like my first paycheck from McDonald's or something.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah,
like,
yeah.
But I know the era or whatever. And I feel like there's two types of hat tricks in LA. There's the Comedy Store hat trick, which I wanted to capture for this special. And then there's the club hat trick, which is Laugh Factory, Improv, Comedy Store.
I call that the triangle.
The triangle.
Yeah, because it's kind of like a triangle.
Totally. Yeah.
If you just drew the map.
That is the triangle.
Yeah, so I'd go, oh, I did the triangle tonight, and I saved the hat trick for the store.
Yo, has anyone done like a triangle hat trick? That would be insane.
Wow. Right?
you're like dehydrated. It's like you ran a marathon. You're like, as soon as you get off stage after your sixth show, you're like, yeah. Water.
I have done hat trick and then factory or improv. You know, I had the motorcycle too, so I could get places quick.
Bro.
But I haven't done hat trick.
That's too much.
That would be six spots.
Or would it be five? You can get away with five, right? Because
that would be five.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm bad at math.
Well, I thought it was six for a second too, but I'm like,
I'm counting three and then three, and I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I've scaled back a little bit in terms of how many. I know you're a grinder, especially from the start. You would do how many would you do a year? You would keep track.
Well, I'm at 151 this year.
Okay, do you still keep the same pace as you did?
Yeah.
All right, that's like.
Well, you know, I'm just not. I never say I'm good, but if I don't get stage time, I'm really really fall behind because there's something weird to me as far as like. I just need to be going on still and working the stuff. I could just go on and do the stuff, but then that starts to fade because I lose heart in it. Mm. So I don't know. There's all kinds of weird things with me. Like, oh, I got to get on, you know?
Everyone's number is different in terms of like what they need to kind of stay sane.
Yeah.
And not just like a mental thing, but sort of like where you feel like you're optimized as a person and as a comedian.
Yep.
Like some people are cool going up twice a week. They can maintain with that. Some people, that's a little light for me.
Yep.
But you're a guy like where more is more. You've always been like that, I've noticed.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah, just any spot? Where is it? I'll do, will you do three a night? Like, what's your...
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Well, since the pandemic, it's been tough to do three a night because it's just, the clubs aren't open now on Sundays and the store just opened back up on Monday. But I try to do two a night.
Yeah.
But that's been even hard. So if I could just get on every night except Sunday, I'm good.
Yeah.
But I, that year and a half or whatever off really fucked me because I was kind of, getting it. All right, I'm starting to get it. And then it started to go away.
Yeah.
You know, like, whoa, man, like you take that much time off.
Yeah, it did suck. But the silver lining was that everyone was on pause because I think there's this constant element and feeling as a stand-up comedian that you know where the bar is and your peers drive you to do better. That's part of the beauty of being at the Comedy Store is you're at the forefront. It's like the top, one of the top clubs in the world.
Absolutely.
And the people who are masters of the craft going in night in and night out. So it just elevates everybody. And there is this part of being an artist where you're like, okay, they're doing this. I've got to keep up. And when you do go on vacation, say when the world is running, you do feel like, oh man, people are lapping me because the world goes on.
Someone just pulled into the lot.
Kind of. It's hard. It's hard for us to take vacations. You get this FOMO because we love this shit so much.
I know.
So when the pandemic hit, it sucked not going up, but it was nice to know that everybody.
Yeah. No one else was.
No one else was. Yeah. And then I learned things too about myself. Just I think, I've been doing stand-up like 20 years at this point, like a long time. And it's always like, it was so hard to get up at the beginning because you're a runt and no one gives a fuck about you. So stage time is hard to come by. And then you start to get more shows and you just always say yes. You never say no to a spot.
Yeah.
You're insane. You're not a comedian if you say no to spots.
Yeah.
So more is more and you just keep doing it. You don't question it. And then, before the pandemic, I'm doing three spots a night, sometimes four, and I'm bouncing around town. And then the pandemic hits and it just sort of, I think everybody, regardless if you're a comedian or not, you do some self-reflection. You go, what do I value? And you do this time math in your mind. Like it just shakes you out of your routine, where you can really, it's almost like taking shrooms or something where you're looking at your life from a different POV because you can like sit with yourself now. You're not so caught up in the hustle and bustle. And I was just thinking, I go, what am I learning by doing three spots a night or four? What is that delta between... I've been doing it so long now where like I know I don't need, maybe when you first start out, you need that kind of hustle. You just need a lot of data points to calibrate yourself and to learn how to write. But I know a lot of these lessons already. So I'm sacrificing having a human life by doing four spots a night. Maybe I don't need to go that hard at this point in my career. And I've kind of found my number. I go up at least like five nights a week.
Right.
And then I'll double up on one or two of those nights. And that's fine for me.
Yep.
Like that's like seven shows or six shows a week. That's more than enough.
Yeah. I'm only 12 and a half years in. So I'm still, it's hard for me to get spots.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like it, but it is.
Yeah.
It's a constant like, dude, you got something? You got it? It's like I'm on the street like, dude, you got anything? Like hustling some drugs or something. But it's still super hard for me to get spots. There's some clubs I don't really work at all, barely. And so if they hit me up, I'm like, oh yeah. Cause you get that carrot dangling, like, I'll finally be in over there,
you know?
And so it's really hard for me to get spots. And, so I just keep going. Now, if I had it made where I just go, these are the days I want to work, and they gave me all those days, then I would definitely dial it back.
Sure.
Because then I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, I know I'm working these days. I'm not like, what days?
For sure. I couldn't be at this. I've only now arrived at this the past couple of years or whatever. Like early on, I couldn't be like, you said yes to everything.
Yeah.
You weren't in a position to say no.
Yeah. I'm still there,
It's almost like you ever have those people who you ever have a meeting with industry types or whatever, and they're like, I don't shake hands, or you have to be in a position of power.
Yeah.
You can't be hungry and on the come up. You can't like move to LA and be like, I don't shake hands.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
Or there'll be some offices where they're like, please don't wear, there's a higher up there, and they go, please don't wear any perfume. Like, it gives the executive a headache or something. So they're like, everyone just knows in the building to not wear perfume or fragrant shampoos. But that's only because the CEO.
Yeah. Made it up.
You can
there.
Yeah, you can't be an intern and say, hey, can you guys not wear perfume?
I know. Yeah. I know exactly.
You just gotta have a headache until you get to the top.
Also, I feel like I'm still learning, you know, like I went a year almost of going really slow mm-hmm. on stage because I was a big fan of Chris Rock, watching him work out stuff slow. And I was like, you know, well, hey, man, I like slow. You know, why am I going so fast? But now I've kind of learned a little slow, a little fast. You know, it's like a gas pedal.
Totally.
On, off, on, off. You know, that's not organic either, where you're trying to like, I'm only going to go slow. Mm-hmm. You know, that starts to feel weird.
Yeah, it's all gears. Just being able to, I mean, it's very much like a manual transmission. You're like, okay, let me pop it in a third. Let me do fourth here.
Yep.
But I do like slow. I think some like early in comedy careers and stuff, it's a lesson you learn later in life to like trust the material. If you've done the work and you've written the joke and it's precise and it's airtight, you can go slow because you've done the work and you can trust the material. Yep. And like Rock is a master. Like he's on Mount Rushmore. So he can go slow because the material is so airtight.
Yep.
I think when you are a newer comedian, maybe the jokes aren't there yet. You're putting a lot of sauce on it.
Oh, yeah. And also you're afraid of silence.
Afraid of, so you're filling all the gaps. Because you don't want to give the audience a chance to question, is this funny or not? So it's just steamroll city.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I am at a point now where I want people to decide if it's funny or not. I don't want to trick them into, I don't want to steamroll them. I don't want to like do a backflip or whatever.
I
want them to decide whether it's funny or not.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love going, I love silence because there's nothing better than when it gets that tension. Mm-hmm. That was my favorite with Norm McDonald.
Yeah.
He would just build this tension of people looking around like, what is he talking about? And then boom, he would hammer you with something and the whole room would, you know, explode.
Yeah. And there's just the comfortability of like being in the pocket like that. Yeah. It's painting with all the colors.
Yeah. So I watched the special. It was great.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks, dude.
It was cool. It was a great idea. I had a couple of questions for you. I noticed, was it a conscious decision not to let people know which rooms you were in? Like, you know, some kind of font, like, you know, original room. And then you moved and then main room. So people knew where you were?
Well, it wasn't conscious. I guess like I set the plate at the beginning of the special. There's kind of a thesis statement. So it's a little montage-y. And I, you know, we show the Comedy Store and what I'm doing with this. And I mean, the preamble of it is kind of, you know, the store has been used in special several times, right?
Right.
Like Louis shot his in the main room. Chappelle has done his in the belly.
Ari
did paid regular in the
Gerard.
Gerard did his. And all these specials, they are filmed in one of the rooms.
Right.
And then also they'll add all these elements to the room.
Smoke.
Like different neons and stuff.
Yeah.
And to me, I always thought that was like blasphemous a little bit because, or I don't know, it's just a different take. It just doesn't look like the place, the gym that we go to night in and night out.
And the feel.
And the feel.
You really captured the feel, man.
Thanks, dude.
And now listen, I only brought that question up because I wanted to know if you had other ideas as you were doing it. Because me, being a Comedy Store regular, I could feel the difference of each room.
Yes.
Look, I kind of got goosebumps because I was like, oh, as a comedian, I was like, I know what room you're in. I could be blindfolded. And I'd be like,
bro,
I'm not kidding you.
No, you're right, dude.
I could be blindfolded and go, original room, main room, belly room. And it really nailed the feel of each one.
Yeah, yeah. Even, I guess I didn't really think about that, just sonically even, they have a different dynamic.
Totally.
The original room is just like electric and dynamic because it's this sweet spot. It's not too big, it's not too small.
Yeah.
Everything bounces off the walls. It's just electric. That's why I love that room for working on new stuff because there's momentum in there. Even if you have a hook of an idea, like it's not fully fleshed out, you'll get it. You can hear enough titters and stuff.
Yep.
Where you can ride that wave and find some tags. Whereas the main room is kind of cavernous. It's oh, so
yeah.
big.
Yeah, and it's date-ish too. Like dates.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's almost like Vegas
theater,
or something.
Yeah,
like
theater.
Me and my gal are.
Give me the A stuff.
Give me the A stuff.
Yeah.
It's like you're going to see a Vegas act, super polished. So. Yeah. You're not really trying any. It's not a really a. You could do whatever you want, obviously, as a comedian. Yeah. But vibe-wise, it's not built for like working on shit.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Kevin Hart, you could do whatever you want. Then you.
Right.
Those are like Mario Star rules. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you
totally.
Can do whatever you want.
Yeah. He's come in.
Yeah.
Whip out notes and.
Pretty
main
much, because everyone's yeah. just so stoked to see yeah. Kevin Hart, but yeah, like yeah. no one knows who I am.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, some, but like. It's minuscule compared to.
I think sometimes I get the biggest laughs in the main room when I go and reach for notes. I can feel them.
Are they
like,
just like, oh my God, is he reaching
like,
for notes?
Notes
in the main room?
Yeah, right, right. They're like, oh, I can hear them laughing. You know,
yeah.
like, and I'd be like, yeah, man, you know.
Also, I feel bad. Like, you can see the table with the bucket of champagne.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to pull notes out with a bucket of champagne guy. Like, this guy's just so angry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at the beginning of the special, I say, you know, normally how I watch specials is they always smoke it out and add lasers and everything. It doesn't look like the place. I just wanted to show the place for what it is. And then, but then I also say, because there's those shots at the beginning where I say the original room. The yeah. main room and the belly room. And there's those slider shots that show the room with the chairs, just what the room looks like. So hopefully people remember that when
yeah.
they watch it. And I don't know. I just want it to be organic. I didn't want it to be like 24 where it's like,
I
main
knew it
room.
Would be weird, like, you know,
yeah.
or spray paint.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
a,
yeah.
A guy doing, you know, graffiti. Yeah. Belly room.
Yeah. Or like Behemoth in the main room. Just like VO.
Yeah.
Just get the Allstate guy to do VO.
That's so great.
Behemoth in the belly room now.
When you were starting the idea, I got a bunch of questions because,
yeah,
how did you feel out the, because when you get the hat trick organically,
mm-hmm.
you don't know which room you're going to start in. So what made you pick the rhythm?
This order?
Yeah.
That's a good question, man. Like, people have different opinions on to what that order should be. But for me, it just felt right. It just felt organic to go, because it doesn't make sense why I would do medium-sized room to large room to small room.
Right.
You would think you would go one or the other. You would go...
Right. Small, medium, large.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah
smallest
large,
to biggest
medium,
or biggest.
Small, yeah.
But I think it's maybe in terms of... My favorite room is the original room, and I think it's the most electric... And I wanted to lead the special with that.
Yeah. Wise move, because, you know, some people might not watch past a certain amount, so they saw a chunk of
that's a good point.
Of your favorite. Yeah, because I saw some analytics of people watching specials, and they watch like 12 minutes.
That's another thing I've had to reconcile to, just come to terms with, that the appetite and viewership on YouTube nowadays, like you make this great thing that may be an hour or whatever on YouTube, but just statistically...
Yep.
There's a drop off after 15, 18 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's so weird that, you know, we're in stand-up comedy and the gold standard was always hours.
Yeah.
But there's no reason the hour is the hour anymore. There's just so many of them.
Oh, yeah.
Which is partly why I decided to do mine this way, because like you're like, how do I make your mine different? Because I could have done, I was going to do this material like at a theater, like at a Black Box theater or like a nice theater. But then part of me was thinking, who cares?
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
if the material is great,
yep.
who cares? Because there's so many specials. It's so saturated.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. And
yeah.
then I had the idea. I go, look, man, it's a rare feat to be passed at the Comedy Store and to be you're like a made man, like a Comedy Store comic.
I think it's like 420.
Not
or
a
something.
Lot, man.
Yeah.
And it's a special place and no one's done a special like this. And I did it on my own. Like I directed this, I paid for this. I wanted to lean into gritty and raw and you're a fly on the wall.
Yeah, I loved it.
Thanks, man.
I loved it.
I didn't want to be Netflix on a budget. I didn't want to be a poor guy pretending to be Netflix.
I know. Those ones where they high contrast light it. They get some special curtain.
Yeah. You know? Well, like, it'll look janky. If I tried to produce a special that to be like a Netflix looking special, there's a disconnect.
Yeah.
And comedy is all about being real and honest.
Totally.
So if I'm trying to pretend that it's like a Netflix special when I'm on YouTube, it kind of reeks of inauthenticity.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I would rather lean into the raw. So I wanted to go that direction. Like, oh, I can't lose if I'm doing an intimate portrait of the store.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, you know, it's almost like in a music terminology where Grateful Dead, their bootlegs are bigger than their records because it's real.
Yeah.
So the people are like, yeah, you know, the studio record, it's just too shiny. It's not who they are. And a lot of the specials, it's like that. I'll be like, you know what, man? I was at that show, and it was fucking way funnier than what I'm seeing right now.
That's interesting that you say that, because that is a discussion I had with other comics and my people, just my approach to this special. Because I've done a traditional special, like back when CISO was a thing. You know, I did it the traditional way, with a production company, at a theater, audience loaded in, two shows, and like, I'm proud of it. I'm happy with it. But those type of specials, and I'm not knocking it, it's just a different thing. You are kind of doing a recreation of your act.
Yeah.
Because you're
not necessarily your fans.
Not necessarily your fans.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sometimes paid audience, like some fans, but then they fill it up. But also, it's this social construct between you and the audience. You're almost on like a balance beam. And everyone is watching you do a recreation of these bits that you spent the last year or 2 years honing honestly in comedy clubs, unfilmed. That's where the magic happens. And now you are filming it. There's cameras and everyone's laughing and stuff, but everyone knows it's being filmed and the energy in the room is a little different than if there were no cameras and you were doing a regular show.
Totally. Just happened to me.
So you're doing a recreation of an honest thing.
And sometimes it doesn't happen. Like with me, it didn't happen. It just was like, oh, I'm the eighth comic on the shoot.
So many variables.
And nobody knows me. And like I said, I'm not making excuses, but I know that material works. I would never go in with just untested material.
No,
so I'm like, not tonight. You know? And I know probably if I would have just shot something in the belly room with 30 people, it would have been, crushing.
Totally.
Know? So, yeah.
And the beauty of this is I just filmed on regular nights of operation at the store. Like I'm doing my regular spots throughout the week. The audience doesn't even know that I'm being filmed.
They didn't even know.
So that's what I was trying to do with this special. Like I wanted to discreetly capture the stand-up sets rather than, all right, everybody, we're doing a taping. Female war, make it loud. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like you change the vibe.
Wait, stop. Okay, we're going to bring him back out real quick. Oh, man.
I mean, it's never as produced as that, but whenever you see cameras and director running around, people act differently.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like telling someone they're being filmed versus a surveillance camera.
Yeah.
Like, one is honest human behavior, and one you have to question.
You know what's funny? When I look at you, I've known you for 12 years. We've fucking sat in the diners together for years, but it's... This business is such a grind that I look at somebody like you, right? And I'm like, man, how am I going to get anywhere when this motherfucker is one of the funniest dudes I know and he's fucking grinding?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, he's, I'm hitting a wall too. Like, everyone's hitting a wall.
And you and a few other people in that club drive me to I'm always constantly working on new stuff and I'm constantly trying stuff and everything because of people like you. And I know that I'm like, and I'm not trying to get famous or anything. I'm just trying to get to your level as far as joke writing and stuff like that. You know, there's people like you and Ian Edwards and a few other guys and you're just going like, these guys are fucking smokers.
That's nice. Thanks, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the truth, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I knew you for a long time.
Right.
And then there was all of a sudden, it was like, oh, there's this thing where people are going on every night.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, yeah, Fahim's on. And then all of a sudden, it's like, Fahim's on. You know that one?
That's so cool. Yeah. You know that? Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. like I've been on the other side of it too. Like, oh shit, Ian's on, you know, like, yeah, there's moments like that. I don't know. It just depends like what you want out of, like, I think we respect the craft so much. We love stand up so much. Yeah. We're such purists that just being really good at that means a lot to us.
That's all I care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other stuff would be nice too. I mean, people get into stand up and want different things. Some people want to have a great acting career. Like they use it as a stepping stone, and or maybe they want wealth or material things. Yeah, like you could tell the guys who are doing comedy because they love the craft, and the guys who are doing it,
or maybe they just
it,
want to get out of the house from their like their family or whatever. They some people, same bits, man. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. I think some people do it because they like the laughs. Some people do it for the laughs.
Yeah.
And some people do it for the puzzle of it. I think you're a puzzle of it guy as well, because you do new stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And you like, you're constantly working on new stuff.
Yeah. It, to me, it's like I compare it to panning for gold.
Yeah.
You know, you got this shiny little nugget and you're shaking the pan and you're like, oh my God, it's getting big. I mean, sometimes I'll look at a bit. I remember Burr said this to me. He goes, yeah, what's your closer right now? I go, this right here. And then he goes, remember when that wasn't working?
Yeah,
and
man.
And when he said that, I was like, you're fucking right. I don't even know how it got to be. You know what I mean?
There's something about ideas just marinating in your mind for a while. There are several bits that maybe 4 years ago I couldn't get it to work.
Yeah.
And I'm at Chipotle or something and just goes, in my brain, and I go, I've got it.
Yep. Yeah.
It's so weird how that happens.
It really is, man.
Yeah.
And for me, it's from getting on and then listening to it the next day. And that's
part of it too. Like, for me as well.
I'll tell you some of them. I'm not going to give away any of the bits.
Sure.
And I watch you a lot, but it's usually just if I'm bringing you up or you're bringing me up, because I'll be somewhere else. But, it's really rare for comedians to bust out laughing, you know?
Yeah, I know.
But I'm watching it, and the diner joke.
Oh.
It really hit me, dude. And this is, like, genius because it's so clean.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's clean comics out there, but what I like about you is there's some reason it feels like there's an edge there. It's edgy.
Yeah.
Which is strange because you're not like, I'm Fahim, edgy as fuck. But it feels edgy. Where if I watch other clean comics, you know, it's like, oh yeah, they're clean.
You know what's weird though? It's like, I like that you say that, but like, I swear, I talk about sex.
Yeah,
there's totally. That whole like, but no one views me as a dirty comic.
I know.
So it's interesting.
If I said that shit, they'd be like, you know, turning up.
Maybe it's like a visual thing.
Like
people will project whatever they want onto you. It's because you're not the first person to like bring this up, because sometimes just I get it a lot where people think I'm a clean comic.
Yeah.
But I say fuck shit.
Oh, yeah. Talk about
like
fucking
pussy,
and jizzing,
like jizzing. But no one perceives
the one pussy joke you did. I'm fucking dying on that one, man.
Like, but no one perceives me to be a dirty comic.
Yeah.
I think it's because they are words I'm using, but I'm painting a larger picture. Like,
and
I'm
act
not,
outs
I'm,
too.
Yeah,
make
like,
it less you abrasive know, gross to or, people. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's more. I'm using these words. It's about a larger idea than just the words I'm saying.
Right.
So maybe that's why people forget that I'm saying fuck or pussy or you know.
Yeah. Listen to Gertie.
I'm trying to be more entertaining, but Gertie's not feeling it.
Gertie's over there like, yeah, these fucking guys.
I talk about the dog park, and then she's all about it, right?
All right, the diner joke was fucking fantastic. And then the wizard joke.
Oh, fuck. Nice. Thanks, man.
I love the wizard joke, and then I love the woke ads.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking good. The woke ads. I remember seeing that one in the room one night, and I was just laughing my ass off. All right, maybe.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, I guess.
And Jordans.
Oh, Jordans.
So there was what I liked about it for me was each room had some big fucking laugh for me.
Yeah.
Like each room, you know? And it was cool because I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of a main room joke.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess that's part of it, too. When I was trying to think of what to do in what room.
Right.
I parsed out, you know, the certain 15s where I'm like, okay, I want to come out hot with this in the OR. some of these bits are more physical, so it'd be nice to have the larger stage to play with in right. the main room. So that'll be fun to explore all that space, and like these more physical bits will be great for the main room because it's just so large.
Yeah.
And then the belly is kind of more of like a chill vibe, and you can get darker, and it's a hangout, like we're in an attic and we shouldn't be laughing about these things.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a nice mix too of just clean and then dirty and then edgy. Just, I don't know.
It's perfect. I thought it was perfect. Perfect amount of time. Mm-hmm. I know each set's 15 minutes. Yeah. That's how it works at the store. And people really get to see the mechanics of the store.
Totally.
You know, 15 in here. I even got a glimpse of the blue star, which means time to get off. Mm-hmm. So I saw that and I was like, ooh, he got that. Fuck yeah. There wasn't anything missed. Man, I was so bummed at the end when you had the guy painting your name, because I filmed mine and I was like, if I ever do a special, I'm going to start with that. And I was like, oh, I got it, man.
Well, that's cool you stuck all the way to the end, because that's after the credits.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
And the Jeff Scott thing too.
Oh, yeah, like, Jeff Scott, man. It was beautiful. Also, there was piano music throughout the whole thing, and that is a Mitzi Shore thing. And Jeff Scott was our guy mm-hmm. the entire time we were there. He passed away,
yeah.
but he played the piano. And it's so funny when you're on the road and they go, what music you want me to bring you up to? And they just look at me and they play like Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no, don't do that. Because the crowd are like, you know, fuck yeah. Fucking Del Razors. And I'm like, oh no, they're like fire.
That
know?
Is weird how you set the plate with music.
Ooh,
you know,
man, it can I be had a to total change it years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But piano is what we've grown up on.
That's what they play us on to. They play yeah. us off to. It's a nice, I don't know, it just felt classic. It felt right.
Was that Jeff Scott's playing or?
No, that's a sound guy. Alan Bickley?
Yeah.
Bickley or Bickle. He did original music for
he
it.
Captured him and this other guy. Though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So. Now, there's a scene with Quentin there.
yeah.
Did you have to get the okay, or you just did it?
I just did it. I was toiling over. It's for YouTube, you know? I'm not making any money off this, really.
Right.
And it's so, like, kid gloves, innocuous. He's just saying, he's just giving me compliments and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he happened to be there one night, so, like, how awesome just to
so great.
Have that slice of life. We did have signs up in the store, too, like, you may be caught on camera, so that's part of
and
it.
And he knows.
He knows.
He puts those signs on Hollywood
sure,
Boulevard.
Sure, he knows. Yeah, I guess what I was thinking too is like there are so many layers between me and Q-Tip. The thing is, he's a fan, man. He saw me and he loved it.
That's great.
And he hung out the whole night. Like we were hanging out.
Yeah.
And then we were in the back, you know, everyone smokes weed. And we're just like talking about best burgers in LA and stuff. And then everyone's passing the weed around and he offers it to me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't. So, yeah. So I turned down like a hit of weed from Quentin Tarantino.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's a nice experience, but I just don't, I'm not good on weed. So I'm no, thank you.
I used to do a bit about like, I was hanging with Motorhead and they were smoking Angel Dust. And I'm like, well, I can't say no. I don't want to look like a pussy. And then I was like, what does it even matter? That's not tomorrow. They're going to go, you know, that dude
yeah.
that we don't even know.
What a nerd.
He said no to the Angel Dust. I'll tell you, man, that is one of the great things of the store. You never know who's in the crowd. I was on, and then went out to the parking lot, and Eleanor Kerrigan said, hey, man, Dr. Dre wants to meet you. He was in there. And then there it is, Dr. Dre in the parking lot. I go, man, your jokes were great. Isn't that fucking wild?
Yeah.
Nothing makes you feel better than someone that you fucking love digs what you're doing, you know?
For sure. And especially like you grew up love like with Quentin, you know, I love his movies. I never think that our timelines or paths are ever going to cross
right.
and they do in this really weird serendipitous way. And it's just a reminder that the Comedy Store is work. It's a workplace for us.
Yeah.
But you forget that it is this hub and epicenter of culture.
Oh,
and people
God.
Pass through there all the time. And it's always been that way.
Yep.
And we're just part of that place's history.
It's so mind-boggling. I mean, I love talking to you. You and I, there's of course, everybody that works at the store loves it. But, man, there's a, you know, I've often said if the store was not here anymore, I wouldn't live in L.A. anymore.
Mm.
I would just, you know, go back to New York or maybe live in Portland and just try to be like a road comic or whatever. But being in New York for a few years, I would see the Instagram, and of course I was coming back every 4, 5, 6 weeks, but still it was just like, oh, man, that's the reason I started comedy. You know, like when I was hanging out there in the 80s, I was like, this place is so rock and roll. You know, it was just wild. So I knew, ooh, if I do comedy, I got to go there.
Yeah.
And when we were going, it was a ghost town.
Yeah.
It was a ghost town.
It's kind of cool to see, I don't know, you just gravitate towards the place you gravitate towards, and it's not because it's cool or sexy, because when I got past there, it wasn't a cool place.
Nope.
It was all about Meltdown and the alt scene and UCB, and I just get in where I fit in. Like, I just loved that place, and then the pendulum shifted.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of, you know, pointed towards the store. And it's just a testament to not like trend chasing and just being honest and true to what you are, who you are, where you are. Yeah. Instead of like, oh, this is cool. Let me do that. Oh, this is cool. Let me do that.
I seen it with music. People are like, oh shit, grunge is in now. Let's get some shorts and Doc Martens. Oh shit, we missed that. Now it's indie music. You know, so they got the horn rimmed glasses and acoustic. And they're like, oh shit, now it's death metal. You know, by the time, you know, I remember going to Meltdown and dudes going, what are you doing here? You're a store comic. And I'd be like, yeah absolutely.
And now, well, I mean, those divisions and lines between genres become, they disappear as you get older and the longer that you've been in the game.
Yeah.
You, cause like, it's like a battle cry in your early 20s. Just like, I perform at these clubs and they're, it's us versus them.
Yeah, totally.
But then you realize you're all brothers and sisters, even though you have different scenes.
That's it.
And it evaporates.
It does.
Bronger's at the store. Like, Bronger was like an alt guy. And like Eddie Pepitone, he's like an alt guy.
Yeah.
But then we're all at the store and that shit doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't, man. And also, I think, you know, all the different comedy is just in the store now. Mm. You know, you've got so many different styles, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I think that, you know, the store was a scary place for a while. People were like, man, this guy's taking drugs down there and getting crazy.
Yeah, that's a relic of the 80s. Like, no one does that.
I know. This is no, it's like so funny. It's just, I'm here for comedy.
For sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, back in the day, maybe comedy was so new and it's in infancy and kind of rock and roll that you can get away with being strung out and doing comedy. But there's just too many people. It's too viable.
Yeah.
And there's too many people who are sober and good at what they do.
Yeah.
That if you're like strung out and doing comedy, it's like, see you later. Yeah, no one has time for that anymore.
You walk out on the patio, they're like, oh God, get away from this guy. He's fucking totally loaded.
Yeah, you can't do that nowadays.
Okay, so it comes out today.
Yeah.
It's out right now.
It's out, baby.
On YouTube. You have your own YouTube channel?
Yeah. So this is part of like building that out too. Like,
right.
I just knew I wanted to make the thing and then figure it out later. Like, do I try to sell it? What should I do with it? And just media is shifting and it's like betting on yourself. I want to build my YouTube channel. I want to build me. I'm doing fine financially. This is an exposure play. I want to bridge the gap between me as an artist and me, the visibility of me.
Right.
And everyone has YouTube. I watch so much stuff on my YouTube. I just want as many people to see this as possible. I want as little friction between the content and the people.
Yeah.
No paywall.
Yeah.
No, hey, it's on Epics or even Netflix.
Yeah.
Like if I did this podcast and it was on Netflix, not knocking Netflix or whatever, but I'm just showing you the mental jump you got to do. People would listen to the pod. They would have to remember the name of the special, go on to Netflix, pull it up through the search bar.
And maybe pay for Netflix. They're not using their buddy's password. Mm-hmm.
With this, it's like it'll be suggested in the right-hand column if it's on YouTube, this, or the description. It'll be right there, the link, the YouTube link.
Yep.
I just want click to content. That's it.
Joe List, all those guys are, you know, Sam Morrell.
And you own it. Like, I own the shit.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, you were writing on a TV show for like 6 months and now that's ended. Do you think you'll ever do it again?
Maybe, you know, I'm glad I did it. I got the job during the pandemic. So we did two seasons on it. It was cool. Like the world stopped. Stand-up wasn't happening. This was a cool side road to go on with comedy. And like, I never tried to be staffed on a show before, but this fell into my lap because they were fans of my stand-up. And so it was over Zoom for a while. And yeah, I got to learn some sitcom principles because it was a Chuck Lorre show, you know?
Oh, wow.
So he's like one of the big guys, and it's different than stand up, you know? You learn some things. Like stand up, it's all very uniquely you.
Yeah.
It's your DNA, your thumbprint. Every joke is like you. This, you learn to be part of a team and you add whatever shades of you can to the larger project.
Are you actually writing just the joke punch up, or are you writing like the lines the people are saying?
It's kind of both.
Right.
Like the punch up is in the rewrites, but Chuck Lorre rooms are different in that everyone writes it together as a room. Like other shows, they break the story together and then a writer goes off with it on their own and they write the entire thing and then bring it back to the room.
Oh,
and then the room rewrites it together.
Yeah.
Chuck Lorre shows, everyone does everything together.
Wow.
So you guys break the story together and then you write the entire script together, like line by line.
Was it weird your first couple weeks? Like, you know, should I jump in here? I think, or were you just laying back?
Not really. Like, I was fortunate because I came at it, I came into the world sideways.
Yeah.
The EPs were fans of mine already. They were fans of my stand-up. So it's like if you have won over the EP, if the EPs already like you,
yeah,
you can't really do any wrong. And I don't know any better because I'm a stand-up comedian. So whatever politics there are or office politics or I don't want them, I'm not privy to that because I have this other job.
Yeah.
Like I have a spot later tonight. So I don't give a fuck or I'm not rude or anything.
Right. But it's like,
I'm not trepidatious. Like I'll say my idea. If they like it, cool. If not, I'm not hurt.
Yeah.
Because this isn't my art and business. This is like business.
Yeah.
Like my art and business is stand-up. So it was kind of great. I got to have the experience and then come at it sideways, not be worried about, do they like me? Do they not? Because I already knew they liked me. That's why they hired me. And I got to learn a bunch of sitcom shit. But it's just such a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, I don't know if I want that long-term.
Yeah.
Maybe
in
little pops here and there.
Yeah, well, I just feel you're too good of a comedian. I think that I don't want to see you disappear to the writer's room. And I think that eventually it's going to happen, you know. So,
that's nice.
Thanks, you know, I mean, you're not 56 like me. How old are you?
38.
Yeah, fucking.
I don't know. Like,
a long time.
Everyone's path is so different, man. And,
it
like,
is.
Look, man, I thought, you know, I'd be further along than I am right now.
Right.
I've been at it, I started when I was 18.
Yeah.
So it's just like everyone's path is so different. Everyone's burn is so different. And I mean, it took me a while to get to this place, but I'm very zen about it. I think it's what do you want out of life?
Yep.
Or what are you content with? Obviously, you want everything in the world, but at minimum, I'm doing pretty good. Like financially, I'm fine. Artistically, I get to do whatever I want. I get to go on, like the improv will have me, the store will have me. I get to work on my craft and I'm making a living doing what I love. I've already won.
Yeah,
I'm playing with house money now.
That's what I tell people.
Yeah.
They go, are you bummed you don't have a special? I go, dude, my name is on the Comedy Store wall.
Yeah.
You understand I was selling motorcycles 12 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I already won.
Yes.
You know?
And it's nice to snap myself because it's very human to kind of want more.
Yeah.
And you look at other people's paper and stuff. But at the end of the day, you go like, oh, fuck, I'm going up tonight. I get to work on this bit that I thought of at a coffee shop or on my drive.
Totally.
And I'm doing okay financially.
Yep.
The rest is icing.
Let me, can they see Goatface anywhere?
Oh, yeah. I think you could rent it on Amazon. That was the sketch show that I did with Hassan Minhaj, Asif Ali, Aristotle Athiris, who's on SNL now. I think they could rent it on Amazon for like $4.
And then your other special, can they see that?
That's
anywhere?
On YouTube. So when CISO went under, Comedy Central's YouTube, like they licensed it. So it's on their YouTube channel.
Oh, cool.
So it's
and
nice.
And what's that called?
That one's called There's No Business Like Show Business.
And then give everybody the spelling of your
name?
Because I don't want them to go like,
oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. Fahim Anwar. So F-A-H-I-M and then last name Anwar, A-N-W-A-R. First special is There's No Business Like Show Business. And this new one is called Hat Trick.
Yeah, and I will put it, I'll post it all over the place.
That's awesome, man. Thank you, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. Like, it's cool to call in all these favors, have other comedian friends really like, help out with the push.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, you know, it's like, you got to do it. You know? It's like we're all on the same team there at the store. I always tell people, I don't have any enemies. To me, it's heart attacks and cancer. Those are my enemies.
Bro, for real.
You know what I mean? Yeah. All right. And give him the, that's your Instagram also, right?
Yeah, Fahim Anwar. Cool. And then Twitter, Fahim Anwar. And then TikTok is Fahim Anwar Comedy. So
yeah,
shout out to Fahim Anwar who got that already.
The
other Fahim Anwar who got the TikTok.
Oh, man.
I know. I almost had it across the board.
All right, everybody, make sure you tune into the special, and let's go some old school grassroots. Just turn people onto it. Just send it to their emails, you know?
Yeah.
Just do a fucking group email, a mass email, and go, hey, it's a 3-day weekend. Gas is $900. We ain't going nowhere. Let's fucking watch this.
That's the beauty of it. Like, I hope people enjoy it and share it, and there's this organic thing that happens, because I think people are tired of being force-fed this, yeah. You know, the pipe kind of force-feeds certain type of comedy and comedians, and I never fit into a certain type of box.
Same here, buddy.
Yeah, like, I'm post-racial. Like, my name's Fahim Anwar, but I just like funny, dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't want to talk about being Afghan or my ethnicity or woe is me for fucking an hour.
That's, you know? What I love about you. It's a lot like Al Madrigal. You know, he's Hispanic, but he didn't come out and go, hey, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you don't even know what he is if you're just listening to the audio, you know?
Funny first.
Yeah.
Identity and ethnicity second.
Yep. Yeah. All right, man. So thanks for doing
the show. Of course, man. Thanks for having
me. You at the store tonight?
Yeah.
Same here.
All right, I'll see you there. Maybe I'll bring you up, or you'll bring me up.
No, I'm doing the belly room tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I guess they didn't have a show. They're like, you want to do the belly room? I was like, absolutely. Yeah. Hell yeah. Here comes the notes.
I'll probably see you there tonight then.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Special episode here on a Friday. Have a great 3-day weekend. Don't forget to subscribe to Fahim's YouTube channel. Don't miss all that stuff. Follow him on Instagram, everything like that. Candles lit.